everyone. Namo myoho renge kyo. Thanks for being here. The lighting might look a little weird. We had here some freezing rains, and really it's like hard snow. It's a big white reflective blanket out front, so it's throwing a lot of sun in through the window. So hope that that's why you'll notice the lighting's a little different. Anyway, we're going to continue with the letter to Horen. As you'll recall, Horen has been practicing for some 15 years, and for the last 4 or 5 years, he's been a devoted follower of Nichiren. And in this letter, Nichiren has taken the opportunity to not only support Horen's position as a disseminator and propagator of Buddhism under the auspices of Nichiren's tutelage. Obviously, Horen has a responsibility to the Sangha to teach many lay people and others who've taken on a career of a monk. I think it's interesting, as he's writing this letter, that he is demonstrating that although he is the leader of the preeminent teacher of the Lotus Sutra in his day, through his own doctrine and analysis and scholarship of Buddhism, and that Horen has been practicing for some 15 years, he, Nichiren, is using the same texts, the same stories from the same material that has been around for thousands of years, since Shakyamuni delivered his sermons, and supporting Horen's practice and advising Horen's practice with those same exact teachings. So there's a real respect for lineage that he's inculcating into Horen, given their relationship to Buddhism and their scholarship, their study. He's not deviating from that. So he's being an example as much as he's being a teacher, a parent, a sovereign, right? The three aspects. So I find that interesting and fascinating. It's quite good for us. So just thought I'd point that out. It's really interesting. This part, as we get into it, I want you to keep in mind that what I said last time about Buddhism being so much about intent and attitude, the following stories that he's going to relay, the following teachings, the expedient means from which Nichiren is going to pull much of the dialogue for Horen, is so much about that, I think that you'll see it immediately if you'll keep it in mind. So here we go. We'll start on this next paragraph. He's talking about Devadatta. Devadatta had 30 of the distinctive features, but lacked the tuft of white hair and the markings of 1,000-spoked wheels. He's been talking about the markings of a Buddha, right? Because he lacked two of the features that distinguished the Buddha, he was afraid that his disciples would belittle him. So he gathered fireflies and stuck them between his eyebrows to resemble the tuft of white hair. And for the markings of 1,000-spoked wheels, he had a blacksmith make pieces of irons in the shape of a chrysanthemum blossom and tried to brand them on the soles of his feet. But he succeeded only in burning his feet. Duh. As he walked on them, the injury grew worse until he was at the point of death, when he confessed to the Buddha what he had done. The Buddha then stroked the burns with his hand, and all the pain went away. So, again, I'm going to remind us, this is not literal, but it's important if you think about attitude and intent, that Devadatta was being manipulative and trying to conceal the fact that he hadn't attained Buddhahood, full enlightenment, but because he had students and followers, he wanted them to think he was more than he was. So he feigned and pretended, and this is bad cause, right? He's lying to these people who are wanting to practice Buddhism correctly, and he's posing as something more than he is. But when he confesses this to Buddha, like, for instance, when we take our own karma, our own lives, our own struggles, our own attachments, our own sufferings, and we sit down in front of our mandala of Gohanzon, and we chant Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, we are taking our lives, whatever is going on in them, whether conscious or not, to Buddha, to our Buddha nature. We invoke our Buddha to cleanse our lives, to realign our thinking, to make samsaric existence more life-affirming, more positive. This is what we do when we chant to Gohanzon, right? So that's basically what he's talking about. This is what the story is about. You take these things that you know that you've done wrong, and you, for lack of a better word, well, let's say you report your screw-ups, your whatever, to your Buddha, the Buddha. And by doing so, it's a sort of, in the West, you would call it a confession. You, by doing so, relieve yourself of the burden, first of all, of continuing to do it, and secondly, that you deeply recognize that this is not the way, and so you correct your own action, right? And we can understand that today. But there was a time when that kind of understanding of one's own control over one's own actions wasn't, other than training in something, wasn't something we felt an internal dialogue capability of doing. So that's what these stories are about, always about our own manipulation of what our mind is conjuring, our samsaric mind. This is why I'll go back to that quote that we've heard of a couple of times now from the Paramitas. To not let your mind run your life, but to become the master of your mind. Right? So let's continue. One might suppose that Devadatta would then repent and reform his ways, but instead, he went about telling people that Gautama practiced petty healing tricks and that he resorted to magic. And yet the Buddha harbored no grudges, even against such enemies. How then could he ever cast aside anyone who had even once put resolute mind and conviction in Buddha? So this is an important lesson. Because it would be easy, as you know, the more we practice Myoho Renge Kyo, the more it integrates into our lives, the more we feel, sense, and experience actual proof. In other words, the workings of our Buddha practice, our Bodhisattva practice, the more we become kind of protective of it. It's precious. It becomes more and more precious to us. And so that when somebody assails it in some way, whether through ignorance or somebody like Devadatta, who's very well read in Buddhism, but still an antagonist, it would be easy in our samsaric way to at least discount them, avoid them, treat them as, like it says here, enemies, and maybe try to fight back against them or degrade them. But in this story, what Nichiren is showing is that that's not that is letting their influence manipulate you. So in other words, that's allowing your mind, your samsaric mind of attachment, arrogance, ego, slip you away from your Buddha way, your Buddha path. So don't let your mind control you. You control your mind. You see, that's an example of where this happens, how you can experience it. So he goes on to say, this is how great the Buddha was. In other words, this life condition of Buddha will afford you this kind of control over your mind. Therefore, when he was depicted in wooden statues or in paintings, his image walked about like the wooden statue carved by King Adyayana, or preached the various sutras like the painted images fashioned by Matanga. So venerable is this personage known as Shakyamuni Buddha, the Lord of Teachings. And yet the blessings to be obtained by honoring him, not for an hour or two, not for a day or two, but for the entire space of a kalpa, pressing one's palms together, raising one's eyes to the face of the Buddha, bowing one's head, abandoning all other concerns, going about it as though attempting to put out a fire in one's own head, as though thirsty and seeking water, as though hungry and seeking a meal, the blessings to be obtained by incessantly making offerings and paying homage to the Buddha in this way cannot match those to be obtained by praising and making offerings to the votary of the Lotus Sutra in this latter age, even though it be only one word spoken in jest, the sort of enthusiastic praise a stepmother might offer to her stepchild. So this is the nature of the cause in the latter day. And remember always, when he refers to Shakyamuni Buddha, he's referring to the universal Buddha nature in all of us. And that's a little tidbit I probably could have said much earlier in these videos, but it's important to keep that in mind. And whenever there's a reference to Shakyamuni Buddha, don't think of it as some old guy from 2,700 years ago. Think of Shakyamuni Buddha as your Buddhahood, the Buddhahood. That will help your mind gain a different perspective about the nature of these teachings, right? Moving on. The blessings to be obtained from the latter act is stated, are 100,000, 10,000 million times greater than those to be obtained by conducting oneself with a believing heart in the three categories of body, mouth, and mind, and offering alms to the living body of the Buddha for an entire kalpa. This is what the great teacher Miao Lo meant when he wrote that one would, quote, enjoy good fortune surpassing the 10 honorable titles, end quote. The 10 honorable titles are 10 epithets that are applied to the Buddha. Miao Lo is saying that the blessings to be obtained by making offerings to the votary of the Lotus Sutra in the latter age are greater than those to be obtained by making offerings to the Buddha of the 10 honorable titles. This is one of the 20 ways cited by the great teacher Miao Lo in which the Lotus Sutra surpasses all other sutras. So this is simply that when we make dedicated offerings to Shakyamuni Buddha, what we're talking about is practicing Buddhism. What we're talking about is when you sit in front of your mandala and you chant the Gohonzon, you are enacting the universal Buddhahood in your life. You are invoking it. And that is a tremendously powerful cause. But what he's implying here is that if you make offerings to votaries of the Lotus Sutra, to your teachers, to those who have brought you and support you in your practice, that cause is millions of times deeper more important in changing your samsaric karmic reality. Don't get it wrong. It's not that that replaces your practice of invoking your Buddhahood. It's just that the nature of the cause in samsara, and we're talking about bodhisattva way here, when you assist, not only assist others, but in this case, honor your sources, honor those things that keep you practicing, offer them whatever support that you can, that commitment, that ichinin, that is a depth of karmic responsibility, karmic revolution, that your conscious mind may not understand. But it's such a benevolent act, such a respectful, dignifying act, that you see, if you dignify your teachers and your sources, then you dignify your own life in ways that you wouldn't normally be able to. Does that make sense? So that's what this is about here. And remember, he's teaching a teacher. So this is an important concept for him to grasp. Moving on. The two doctrines outlined above were preached by the Buddha himself, and yet they may be difficult to believe or understand. How, you may ask, could one possibly acquire greater blessings by making offerings to an ordinary person than making offerings to a Buddha? Again, understanding that making offerings to a Buddha is a mental exercise by invoking the Buddha nature in all of us. So, greater blessings from offering to an ordinary person is because you're reaching outside of your own karmic bubble and you're offering gratitude to your teachers, your sources of support. That's right here in samsara, in this life. So that act is not only your environment, which you're now acknowledging with great dignity, which reflects directly back on you, because you and your environment are one. But samsarically, we don't think that way. But through our actions, we can integrate that. Does that make sense? So, moving on. However, if you declare that these doctrines are mere lies, then you call into doubt the golden words spoken by the Thus Come One, Shakyamuni himself. You make light of the testimony to their truth given by Many Treasures Buddha, and you disregard the sign manifested by the Buddhas of the Ten Directions when they extended their tongues. And if you do these things, you will fall into the Avicii hell alive. You will be as nervous and uneasy at heart as a person who tries to ride an unruly horse over a rocky slope. On the other hand, if you believe these doctrines, if you understand these doctrines, you will become a Buddha of perfect enlightenment. How then are you to go about nurturing resolve in the Lotus Sutra? For if you try to practice the teachings of the sutra without resolve, it would be like trying to enter a jeweled mountain without hands to pick up its treasures, or like trying to make a 1,000-mile journey without feet. The answer is simply to examine the proof that is close at hand, and thus to take hold of resolve that is far off. On the first day of the first month of the Buddha's 18th year, when he had finished preaching the Lotus Sutra, 80th year, sorry, he made this announcement, quote, Ananda, Maitreya, Mahakashyapa, I came into the world in order to preach the Lotus Sutra. I have accomplished my original intention, and now there is no further reason for me to remain in the world. 3 months from now, on the 15th day of the second month, I will enter Nirvana. Right? This is directly from the sutras. Now, you know, there's an important I mean, he's announcing that he's leaving, that he's going to die, right? His body, his human body is going to die. But one of the very important aspects of this sentence that you might just walk right by is another validation, and this is what other schools deny, but it's another, not just validation, but an explicit statement that now that I have preached the Lotus Sutra, I came into the world in order to preach the Lotus Sutra. In other words, the Lotus Sutra was his whole reason for being. So how could any other sutra surpass it? All the other sutras are important, to be sure. They're levels of teaching, but only to get you to the Lotus Sutra. I mean, this happens over and over throughout the sutras. So I just don't get how people could deny that. I have accomplished my original intention, he says, and now there's no further reason for me to remain in the world. I mean, this is Shakyamuni's mic drop, right? So, moving on, Nichiren writes, everyone, both those among the Buddhist followers and outsiders, doubted this pronouncement. They didn't want to believe it, right? But since the Buddha's words are never spoken in vain, when the 15th day of the second month at last came, he did, in fact, enter Nirvana. As a result, people recognized that the golden words of the Buddha were true, and they began to have a certain amount of resolve in his words. The Buddha made another prediction, saying, quote, 100 years after I pass away, a ruler named Ashoka the Great will appear. He will rule over 1/3 of the continent of Jambudvipa and will erect 84,000 stupas and pay honor to my relics, end quote. People doubted this statement as well, but just as the Buddha had predicted, the king appeared, and from this time onward, people believed. The Buddha also said, quote, 400 years after I pass away, there will be a great ruler named King Kanishka. He will gather together a group of 500 arhats, and they will compile the work known as the Great Commentary on the Abhidharma. End quote. This prediction also came about just as the Buddha had stated. As a result of these proofs, people came to believe the predictions of the Buddha. If, therefore, the two doctrines I cited earlier are nothing but lies, then everything that is in the Lotus Sutra must be a lie. In the Lifespan chapter, the Buddha says that he became a Buddha numberless major world system dust particle kalpas in the past. We are ordinary beings, human beings. We can hardly remember what happened to us since our birth in this present existence, much less what happened one or two lifetimes back. How then can we be expected to have resolve in what happened numberless major world system dust particle kalpas ago? Moreover, the Buddha made a prediction to Shariputra saying, quote, in ages to come after a countless, boundless, inconceivable number of kalpas have passed, you will be able to become a Buddha with the name Flower Glow, thus come one. He also made a prediction concerning Mahakashyapa saying, in future existences, so on and so forth, and in his final incarnation, he will be able to become a Buddha named Light Bright, thus come one. But these passages in the sutra concerning events in the distant future, and so it is difficult to expect ordinary people like ourselves to have resolve in them. It is thus difficult for ordinary people who have no knowledge of the distant past or future to have resolve in this sutra. That being the case, even if we were to carry out its practice, what meaning could it have for us? In light of all of this, it would seem that when one who is able to show clearly visible proof in the present expounds the Lotus Sutra, there also will be persons who will understand and believe. In the declaration concerning sutra readings that you, the Honorable Horen, have sent to me, you state, quote, To mark the 13th year of the departure of my late beloved father, I have performed a 5-time recitation of the One Vehicle Sutra, the Lotus Sutra of the Wonderful Law. Shakyamuni Buddha, the Lord of Teachings, is known by the title World-Honored One of Great Enlightenment. The character that signifies honored can be interpreted as lofty, and the character for lofty can be interpreted as filial piety. Shakyamuni Buddha is honored with the title World-Honored One because, among all the persons noted for their filial devotion, he is the most outstanding. Filial. I always pronounce that in different ways. The body of Shakyamuni, thus come one, was golden-hued and endowed with the 32 features. Among these 32 was an unseen crown of the head, which means that although the Buddha was 16 feet tall, the Brahmin of the bamboo staff school was unable to measure his height, and the deity Brahma was unable to see the top of his head. Hence, the name an unseen crown of his head, of the head. And he gained this characteristic because he was a great man who was foremost in filial devotion. Now, again, you know, this is all from expedient means and the stories of the sutras and the sermons. This thing about height and not being able to see above him is a statement of dignity and respect and his imposing, Buddha's imposing presence. It is in our lives. And when we invoke the Buddha nature in our lives, it is larger than our samsaric idea, right? It is imposing. There are two classes on, or classics on filial piety. One is a non-Buddhist work, the classic of filial piety, by the sage known as Confucius. The other is a Buddhist text, the work known now as the Lotus Sutra. Though one text is Buddhist and the other not, with regard to this point, their import is the same. What inspired Shakyamuni to devote himself to religious practice over kalpas equal in number to dust particles in an effort to attain Buddhahood? It was nothing more than the idea of filial devotion. All the living beings of the six paths and four forms of birth are our fathers and mothers. Therefore, as long as Shakyamuni was unable to treat them all with filial devotion, he refrained from becoming a Buddha. So this is interesting. Nichiren is interpreting these skillful means, these stories of the sutras, to pluck out one important aspect that relates to Horen's devotion and offerings to his deceased father. Because Horen read the 16th, the 15th, depends on the version, the lifespan chapter, and recited it several times a day. He was respecting his father through the Buddha's teachings, right? So there's a nature of dignity and an offering to that is what Nichiren is pointing out, kind of built into your practice of the Lotus Sutra. Not to minimize, but to honor that he's doing something of great merit. So he goes on. The Lotus Sutra offers a secret means for leading all living beings to Buddhahood. It leads one person in the realm of hell, one person in the realm of hungry spirits, and thus one person in each of the 9 realms of existence to Buddhahood, the 10th realm. And thereby, the way is open for all living beings to attain Buddhahood. The situation is like the joints in a piece of bamboo. If one joint is ruptured, then all the joints will be split. Or it is like the move known as shicho in the game of Go. If one stone is declared dead, then many stones will die. The Lotus Sutra also is like this. Metal has the power to cut down trees and plants, and water has the power to extinguish any kind of fire. In like manner, the Lotus Sutra has the power to bring all living beings to to the state of Buddhahood. Among the living beings of the six paths and the four forms of birth, there are both men and women, and these men and women all were our parents at some points in our past existences. Therefore, as long as even one of these fails to attain Buddhahood, then we ourselves cannot become Buddhas. That's very interesting. This, to you genealogists out there, this might be a very interesting statement. Basically, as Buddhism teaches, and what Nichiren is pointing out here, is that our brief lives on this planet, this samsaric existence of ours, could not be without its precedence, right? Any study of history, archaeology, the human species will take you back through the formations of these different evolutions of culture and migrations across the planet, going back 10,000, 60,000 years. Not so much, I'm not talking about going back to apes or whatever it is that you want to believe there. What I'm talking about is that there weren't always 8 billion people on the planet. Population's been growing over centuries, right? And at some point, there must have been very few of us on the planet. So, genealogically, our existence relies on the profligation of the species, right? So even though our mothers and fathers, our grandparents on both sides, are lineage we can conceive of and see in our lives, think of the fifth meditation in Gangyom. We honor those people because we have experience of them in our lifetimes. But they too have grandparents, and those have grandparents, and those have grandparents, right? So the lineage of our being here comes through a great amount of DNA, a great amount of cause making. And all of those, we want to offer dignity and solace to. And so Nichiren is starting to talk about another concept in Buddhism here, that when we chant for our Buddha nature, we actually connect with these generations. And we affect karmically, if you understand energy, the energy that has manifested through this whole chain of events that results in you and me, is an energy that is without extinguishing. My samsaric life will come to an end, but this energy from which I come continues. This life process from which I manifest continues. Not me, not Sylvain, but the energy that precipitates the causal relationships that I represent. Right? So, not only do I affect my past, but if I have offspring, those offspring I've affected with my karma, and they have built and come from their own karma. They are their own entity. They will go on to pass this karmic relationship on. And so by chanting myself for Buddha nature, even though I'm incommunicado with my daughter, her life is affected. And that affect, whether she acknowledges it or not, or even knows about it, will affect her offspring. This is a basic teaching of Buddhism, but it requires that you understand the nature of energy. Because energy doesn't have a name. Energy, there's no Bob energy, there's no Sylvain energy, there's no Betty energy, right? Betty is her own human being. But she's human by virtue of life force from which she instantiates her Bettiness, which is something in constant change, right? All right, I digress. So the point that Nichiren is making here is that by offering the ultimate teachings in honor of his father, he is enabling karma to change through his familial line. So what could be more indicative of filial devotion or filial piety, right? This is the ultimate respect to pay to one's elders. Hence, people of the two vehicles are referred to as those who do not know how to repay their debt of gratitude, and it is taught that they will never be able to attain Buddhahood. This is because they do not universally manifest their sense of filial devotion. The Buddha, this is also, as you've probably already picked up, integral to the idea of bodhisattva, this sense of gratitude. All right, I'll go on. The Buddha became enlightened to the Lotus Sutra, and as a result of the filial devotion that he showed to the mothers and fathers of the six paths and the four forms of birth, his person was endowed with blessings. And these blessings enjoyed by the Buddha can be transferred by him to people who put their resolute mind and conviction in the Lotus Sutra. It is like the food eaten by a loving mother, which turns into milk for the nourishment of her baby. For the Buddha has said, quote, "Now this threefold world is all my domain, and the living beings in it are all my children." And so this is the Ijnan with which Buddhism is taught, right? Parent, teacher, sovereign. Parent, teacher, sovereign. It's a rule of behavior for human beings to live this life fully and experience the Buddha nature. Moving on. Shakyamuni, the Lord of Teachings, takes these blessings and in the form of the words that make up the Lotus Sutra, brings them to the mouths of all living beings for them to taste. A baby does not know the difference between water and fire and cannot distinguish medicine from poison. But when the baby sucks milk, its life is nourished and sustained. Although one may not be versed in the Agama Sutras the way Shariputra was, although one does not have the understanding of the Flower Garland Sutra, or the Vatamsaka Sutra, or in Japanese the Kigan Sutra, that Bodhisattva Moon of Deliverance had, and although one has not committed to memory all the sacred teachings set forth by the Buddha in the course of his lifetime, as had Bodhisattva Manjushri, if one listens to even one character or one phrase of the Lotus Sutra, one cannot fail to attain Buddhahood. We've heard this before, right? This is in the sutras itself, in the Lotus, certainly. The 5,000 people of overweening pride lacked resolve, having listened to the Lotus Sutra but failed to understand it. But because they did not slander it, after 3 months had passed, they were able to attain Buddhahood. These are the people referred to when the Nirvana Sutra says, quote, "Whether they have resolute mind and conviction or do not have resolute mind and conviction, all shall be reborn in the immovable land of Buddhahood." In the case of the Lotus Sutra, even though people may not have resolute mind and conviction in it, so long as they do not slander it, then once they have heard it, they will attain Buddhahood, strange as it may seem. This is called the Buddha of sowing, right? The practice of sowing. It's putting the seeds of Buddhahood in people. And so if they read it, they may not understand it, but they've been fully, it's been taught to them, whether they understand it or not, as long as they don't reject it or say anything or think anything that it is lesser or, in some way put it down as ineffectual or counter to reason or whatever. If they simply don't practice it and just go on without the word here slandering it, is, as I've explained before, simply not contradicting it, but accepting that, yeah, this is a teaching, this is interesting, blah, 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 but I won't practice it. I'm going to go on my own separate way. if you don't put it down, if you don't keep other people from looking into it or practicing, then you're not making a cause against it in any way. Then just because of your exposure to it, you will eventually attain Buddhahood. But again, our practice is about attaining Buddhahood right now, immediately. So someday in the future isn't good enough for us. We're greedy. We're greedy humans. So we want to attain our enlightenment right now. And there's no reason why we shouldn't, right? It doesn't harm anyone for you to become a spectacular being, right? So why not get there right away? Myoho Renge Kyo. He continues, it is like a person bitten by the reptile known as the seven-step snake. He may go one step or as many as seven steps, but by that time the poison will have had its mysterious effect upon him and he will be unable to take the eighth step. Or it is like the seven-day embryo in the womb. Within 7 days' time, the embryo will invariably change shape. It will never retain the same shape for 8 days. So he's talking about natural processes here, and he's equating the Lotus Sutra to a teaching of the nature of life itself. So you can't help but manifest it. Going on. And you, the Honorable Horen, are at present in a similar situation. The blessings of Shakyamuni Buddha have already been transferred to you, to your person. And your person is a continuation of the face and form of your departed father. There's that, you know, human lineage, linkage, DNA, if you will. It is like a seed that puts forth sprouts, or a flower that produces fruit. Though the flower falls, the fruit remains. Though the seed is hidden from sight, the sprout is visible to us. Thus, the blessings that you yourself enjoy are in fact treasures belonging to your late father. When the pine flourishes, the cypress will rejoice. When the grasses wither, the orchids weep. And if even feelingless beings, such as plants and trees, can behave in this way, then how much more so do those who have feelings, let alone those who are bound together as father and son? Ooh, that's making me pause for a moment. Thought about my father. No matter how you feel about your father, if you just for a moment realize that whatever fortune you feel or are experience in your life is only made possible because of your father and mother. This is what filial piety is all about. If you recognize their role in your ability to have what you have now, then no matter what their lives were like or how you perceive their lives to have been, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, you have to deeply appreciate them simply for being your parents, for allowing truly yourself to exist. And what Nichiren is saying is this is like a tree acknowledging the seed it came from. That's a pretty powerful thought. Probably need to meditate, chant about that some more. All right. In your declaration regarding sutra readings, you state, quote, from the morning when my compassionate father closed his eyes to the 13th anniversary of his passing, I have recited the verse section of the lifespan chapter before Shakyamuni thus come one and have transferred the merits to the departed. And this is our fifth meditation in Gongo, right? At present, it would appear that the people of Japan put resolve in the teachings of the Buddha. But in ancient times, before the Buddhist teachings were introduced to this country, people knew nothing about either the Buddha or his teachings. It was only after the battle between Moriya and Prince Jogu that some people took resolute mind in Buddhism though others did not. The situation was similar in China. After Matanga had introduced Buddhism to China, he held a debate with the Taoists. When the Taoists were defeated in debate, then for the first time there were people who put their resolve in Buddhism, though there were many more who did not. In China, there was a man named Wu Lung, who was highly skilled at calligraphy and was often requested to write things for other people. But regardless of where the request came from, he absolutely refused to write out any passages from the Buddhist sutras. When he was on his deathbed, he summoned his son Yi Lung to his side and said, quote, "You have been born into our family and have inherited talent in the art of calligraphy. Out of filial devotion to me, you must never transcribe the Buddhist sutras. In particular, do not transcribe the Lotus Sutra." Lao Tzu, whom I honor as my teacher, bears the title Honorable One of Heaven. Heaven cannot have two sons in it. And yet, in the Lotus Sutra, the Buddha declares that, quote, "I am the only person who can rescue and protect others," end quote. I find such a claim suspicious in the extreme. If you fail to heed my dying words and transcribe any of the Buddhist texts, I will instantly change into an evil spirit and put an end to your life, end quote. So that's a pretty determined thing to say for a father to his son, right? After he said this, his tongue split into 8 pieces. His head broke into 7 parts. Blood spurted from his 5 sense organs, and his life came to an end. I would think so. But his son, unable to judge good from bad, was unaware that his father had manifested these evil signs and had fallen into the Avicii hell because he had slandered the correct teaching. Therefore, the son abided by the dying words of his father, never transcribing Buddhist sutras, much less allowing himself to recite such sutras or texts. And so he continued a while in this manner. The ruler of that time was called Tsuma. This ruler, wishing to have some sutra text transcribed in connection with a Buddhist celebration, inquired as to who was the most skilled calligrapher in all of China, and was informed that it was Yi Lung. He summoned Yi Lung and explained his wishes, but Yi Lung repeatedly refused the work. The ruler, unable to prevail upon him, resigned himself to employing someone else to write out the sutra text, but he was dissatisfied with the results. Summoning Yi Lung one more time, he said, quote, "You inform me that it is out of respect to your father's dying wishes that you refuse to undertake the sutra transcriptions I have requested. Though I hardly regard that as a valid excuse, I will accept it for the time being. I therefore ask only that you write out the title of the sutra." That's clever. End quote. Three times the ruler issued his command, but Yi Lung continued to decline. The ruler, his countenance clouded over with anger, said, quote, "All of heaven and earth are within the jurisdiction of the ruler, and if that is so, then your late father too is a subject of mine, is he not? You have no right to slight an official undertaking simply because of private reasons. You must transcribe at least the title of the sutra. If you refuse, even though the place may be the site of a Buddhist celebration, I will have you beheaded at once." Therefore, Yi Lung transcribed just the title of the sutra. He wrote, Myoho Renge Kyo, Volume 1, and so on for each volume down to Volume 8. When evening came, he returned to his home and said to himself with a sigh, "I have violated my father's dying words, and because the ruler's command left me no choice, have transcribed a Buddhist sutra and behaved in an unfilial way. The gods of heaven and the deities of earth must surely be looking upon me with anger and regarding me as an unfilial son." So saying, he retired for the night. In that night's dream, a brilliant light appeared, shining like the morning sun, and a heavenly being stood in his courtyard, accompanied by countless followers. In the air above the head of the heavenly being, there were 64 Buddhas. Yilung pressed his palms together and said, "Who may this heavenly being be?" The being replied, "I am your father, Wu Lung. Because I slandered the teachings of the Buddha, my tongue split into 8 pieces, blood spurted from my 5 sense organs, my head broke into 7 parts, and I fell into the hell of incessant suffering. The terrible torments I endured at the time of my death were hardly bearable, but the sufferings that followed while I was in the hell of incessant suffering were 100,000 million times worse. The pains a person would feel in a human realm if he were to have his fingernails pried off with a dull knife or his head cut off with a saw, if he were forced to walk over live coals or were confined in a cage of thorns, would be as nothing compared with my pains. I longed for some way to tell you of my plight, but could think of none. How inexpressible was my regret at the fact that at the time of my death I warned you never to transcribe the words of Buddhist sutras, and that I left that as my last instruction. But it was too late for regrets, and no matter how I despised myself for what I had done, or cursed my tongue, it was to no avail. Then, yesterday morning, the single character Myo, which begins the title of Lotus Sutra, came flying through the air above the cauldron that is hell of incessant suffering, and there changed into a golden-hued Shakyamuni Buddha. This Buddha possessed the 32 features, and his face was like the full moon. He spoke in a thunderous voice, saying, quote, "Even those who have destroyed enough good causes to fill the entire realm of phenomena, if they hear the Lotus Sutra just once, will never fail to attain enlightenment." Then from this one character, Myo, a heavy rain began to fall that extinguished the flames of hell of incessant suffering. King Yama tipped his crown in a gesture of respect. The wardens of hell put aside their staffs and stood at attention, and the transgressors in hell looked around in astonishment and asked what had happened. Then the character Ho appeared in the air and underwent the same kind of transformation, followed by the character Ren, the character Ge, the character Kyo. In this way, 64 characters appeared and became 64 Buddhas. 64 Buddhas appearing in the hell of incessant suffering were like 64 suns and moons coming out of the sky. Amrita or sweet dew then descended from the sky and fell upon the transgressors. The transgressors asked the Buddha why these wonderful things were happening. The 64 Buddhas answered, saying, quote, "Our golden-hued bodies do not come either from sandalwood or from jeweled mountains. They come from the 8 characters, the 64 characters that make up the titles of the 8 volumes of the Lotus Sutra, which were transcribed by Yilung, the son of Wu Lung, who is here in the hell of incessant suffering. The hand of Yilung is part of the body fathered by Wu Lung, and the characters written by that hand are as though written by Wu Lung himself." When the Buddhas had spoken in this way, the transgressors in the hell of incessant suffering said, quote, "When we were in the Saha world, we too had sons and wives and followers. We have wondered why none of them performed religious acts for our repose, and thought that perhaps, although they were performing acts of goodness, the effect was too weak to reach us here. We sighed and sighed, but to no purpose. One day, 2 days, 1 year, 2 years, half a kalpa, a whole kalpa went by, and then at last we met with a good friend who was able to save us. So all of us have become followers and are about to ascend to the heaven of the 33 gods. I have come to pay my respects to you before we go." Thus spoke the heavenly king. Quite a story. In his dream, Yilung was filled with joy. After he had and his father had parted, he had wondered in what world he would see him again. But now he could see the figure of his father and encounter the Buddhas as well. The 64 Buddhas then announced, quote, "We are serving no particular master. You shall be our patron. From today on, we will guard and protect you as though you are our parent. You must continue to be diligent. When your life ends, we will without fail come and lead you to the inner court of the Tushita heaven. Such was the promise they made. Now, I'm going to pause here. So, what have we learned? I think it's easy to see that Nichiren is nurturing this student of his, this student who is also a teacher, in the teachings of Buddhism, how to understand them, and how to teach them. But he's also, as he's wont to do in personal letters, is rewarding Horen for his practice and explaining to Horen the merits of his acts, of his practice, and how in the light of the teachings in the text, it's, see, Nichiren does this all the time. He wants to, senile old man? He wants to laud the efforts of his students, right? He wants to show them appreciation for their practice and for their acts, whether it's sending them rice or it's offering prayers to the dead, all of these things. But always, 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 Nichiren wants it understood that it's in our life, our samsaric reality, it's not Nichiren the man saying, good job, and patting you on the back. It's Nichiren pointing out that you are lauding your own life. Don't forget to take time to appreciate the effort that you're making and the results that you are bound to gain from it, because it's in the text itself. It's in the teachings of Buddha, and Buddha's no liar. So Nichiren puts himself in the position, again, as teacher, parent, sovereign. He doesn't simply want to say, attaboy. He wants to say, give yourself an attaboy. Look how profound the act is that you just did. Isn't that amazing? Now, this is a reason to be very thankful for Nichiren as a teacher and parent and sovereign, in that he protects us from wandering in the wrong way, right? But it's also an opportunity to more deeply understand our own practice of Buddhism and where the joy comes from, where the reward comes from. It doesn't come from outside of us. It may seem that way because we're samsaric beings and everything is other in samsara. But the truth of the matter is, the way life works is all of the gains and sufferings that we experience in life come from the mind, comes from our attitude, comes from our intent, comes from the causes we make in our own lives. It's easy to get deluded into the thoughts that we are the great manipulators of others around us. But that's the delusion. Because as much as it may look that way, all of that really only affects our own mind, our own experience of life. That's the great teaching of Buddhism, right? Think on that, chant on it. Use the comment sections to ask more about it or comment on it. I appreciate that very much. I appreciate you guys more than I can express with words. So I'll just say, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Stay strong in your practice. Stay vigilant in your health. I'll see you in the next one.